Item three, staff presentation on survey of 1937 Act systems regarding pay items included in pensionable compensation. Kurt, I thought I saw Kurt here a minute ago. Did he step out? If you could, yeah, thank you.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Good morning, Kurt.
Morning.
We are at item three, the survey of 37 Act systems regarding items included in pensionable compensation.
Okay, so you have a memo before you. I kind of laid out the timeline of all what happened. PREPRA was implemented. We had to decide for PREPRA pensionable compensation, what was in and what was out. CalPERS looked like they were doing one thing. We didn't immediately make a determination. Then we went through and analyzed pay codes, brought those back for determination. And eventually we got to a decision where, for CICERA, PREPRA pensionable compensation was going to be limited to base pay only. Last year, CalPERS adopted their final regulation, which included 99 pay items beyond base pay. And the board asked us to take a look at other CERL systems, particularly the surrounding systems, to see what they were doing. So that's what we did. And I have the result of the survey on the second page of the memo. And basically, I guess when you look at all the pay items, some of them seem more includable and less includable, and we sort of expected to see some systems including more and some systems including less, but really it's all over the place. For any given pay item, any type of pay item, there's at least one system that includes it and at least one system that excludes it. So there isn't any clear rhyme or reason. So I split them up into these basic categories. FLSA pay, which is something that's particular, usually to firefighters, could also be police officers. Shift differentials is all
define
different.
Define FLSA so people know what FLSA is.
Oh, sure. FLSA, so under the federal labor code, FLSA stands for the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Okay.
It's the federal overtime rules about when you need to pay someone time and a half, for example. And, you know, for the typical person who works in an office, it's after 40 hours under the federal rules, you have to pay time and a half.
Yeah.
Some shifts, they work typically more than that. So our firefighters, for example, work average 56-hour work week. And they don't get paid time and a half for everything over 40, because what this act says is it says that, well, for firefighters around the country, 53 is about average. So they really only need time and a half beyond 53. So they really only need that bonus for the time over 53, which would be 3 hours. So they're paid an extra half time for those 3 hours. And because of the way the law is written, you have to calculate this over a pay period of a fixed number of days. And our
I got it. It has to do with overtime.
24 days. Well, the reason why in our county it's a separate pay item has to do with the fact that in our county, firefighters are paid on a monthly basis.
Okay.
And in some counties, they're not. In some counties, FLSA is rolled into base pay.
All right, thank you.
Well, that was a little too long. Okay, so shift differentials is all different types of shift differentials. Holiday pay is something kind of particular. Longevity pay, so I said six counties include longevity pay, but that doesn't mean that 14 counties excluded, because some counties simply don't have it, okay? Special duties and skills, that'd be for being assigned to a certain team or a certain facility or something. Education incentives, for having a post-certificate, for having a master's degree, for having a CPA, that sort of thing. Lead duties or supervisory duties, officer in charge duties, that sort of thing. Charge nurse. And on-call pay. Like I said, there isn't too much we can say of what should be and shouldn't be included based on that survey alone. We do know that of the surrounding systems, Stanislaus County and Sacramento limit pensionable compensation just to base pay, just like Cicero does. And there is the issue that was brought up at the time that if we're going to only collect contributions on base pay, but then later start to include them, we would then have to decide, well, do we go back and collect more on the stuff we didn't include? Does it go into the unfunded liability, that sort of thing, which is why we tried to get this resolved as quickly as we could, because, you know, 5 years down the road, that's a much bigger problem to try and unwind. Any questions?
I do. Some of these decided based on MOU. So I understand, like, one county gave up some of these to get it more wrapped into their base pay.
Well, the MOU, they could decide to roll something into their base pay, and then it would have to be included. But by MOU, you can't take a particular pay item and say this pay item is or is not going to be in pensionable compensation. That determination is in statute and is determined by the board. It's not determined by the contract between the employee and the employer.
Let's say, like, Stanislaus as an example. I heard secondhand that they may have said, okay, we're no longer going to offer these incentives
sure.
to roll into, and that could be why it's not included.
Yeah, exactly. There are, I mean, they definitely do include FLSA time, for example, because they pay biweekly, they're able to do that, and they did that. They put it into their base pay.
Okay, and then the other question is the board always deciding this, or sometimes the staff deciding it?
Ultimately, it has to be based on board policy. There was one system that had an interesting approach where they were requiring the employer to certify that these pay items met all these conditions that we were looking at. So the employer themselves determines, well, is this part of their normal monthly rate of pay? Is this paid to everyone in the same grade or class? And the employer certifies that. And I guess the policy is then, well, I'm not sure whether they necessarily accept that determination or whether it's further reviewed or what. But it's a little bit different. But ultimately, it's up to the board.
Okay.
With the board's policy.
Kurt, it's no secret where I stand with this issue, and in fact probably has a lot to do with why I was hoping it would come back. I believe that PEPR employees, especially since CalPERS has initiated so many of them, I don't believe in initiating that many at all, but I do believe there's certain differentials that employers use to encourage employees to do the work, like a shift work. Working graveyards is very difficult on the body. I did that when I worked in the hall for a while, and it's not fun, and your clock doesn't click right. Well, in order to get people to do that, they offer them the differentials. And yes, they get paid the differential, and it's usually 5% to do that. But the question for us is, should that be included with PEPRA? And I am of the opinion that there are certain pay codes that we should include in PEPRA. And I would hope that this board would take a look at those issues. And also, if we do include differentials for those PEPRA people, how much are we really raising their salaries in their final average salary, and how much is it going to be? And I'm wondering how many of us have actually gone through the steps to see what it would be if we allowed differentials and say somebody had a shift differential and maybe somebody had bilingual, and so they're getting 5% for each, so they're getting 10% added to their final average salary. How much that actually boosts their salary in the end. It really isn't significant like terminal pay was. And we all agreed that terminal pay wasn't an issue, and the governor went after it and said, so there's no more terminal pay. But these differentials, these shift differentials, are used to get employees to take the shifts or to do the things that are not most desirable. And also the incentives are used to educate your people so that they are more qualified for their jobs over the time. I think those are important things, and I think those employees should be rewarded for those efforts. So I'm going to ask that this be brought back to the board for reconsideration, that it be agendized again for reconsideration, and that if it is considered, that we as a board establish an ad hoc committee that goes through the differentials. Because when Ventura was passed, and the board that was sitting at that time had to decide what differentials were included in Ventura, they went through everything, and we have seen the lists and lists of differentials that were granted. I think that was way excessive, but there are differentials that I think we should include in for Pepper employees. So I would ask for this to be brought back and reconsidered.
I'm going to point out, the last time we talked about this, we had a discussion on normal or base pay. I know Sackers asked the legislators to come back and define it, and they said they wouldn't. So some people said if it didn't have base, they didn't mean base, they wouldn't have said base. The other ones argued, like myself, I normally get my post, advanced post, that's my normal thing. So I think we had a philosophical between base and normal. And that seems to be where we left it off.
I just would have a procedural question, and I wasn't on the board when the vote was taken, but my understanding of asking for reconsideration is it has to be someone who voted. If the board voted to just limit it to base pay, there's a majority of people who did that. So that's one of those people who has to make the motion for reconsideration. And so we need to go back and look. If Jerry knows that he did
voted for it, so I can't bring it back. But
no,
you
can't.
You can bring it up for reconsideration.
He voted against it.
So I just want, so that we don't have any problems in the future, let's just find the person who voted for it so they can make the motion to reconsider.
To reconsider.
So we discussed this before, and we didn't have to do this before we brought it up, but am I wrong?
I think the initial motion for base pay was that we had to make a decision at the time because we were setting our contribution rates. And so at the time, everything was sort of in flux. And so we made the most conservative option because we didn't know what was going to be included, what was going to be excluded. So we made the most conservative option. And I believe the motion at the time, I may be in error, was that we would reconsider this in the future, consider reconsidering it in the future if circumstances change.
So that was my motion, and that's not my recollection. My recollection is that there was no attachment of reconsideration in the future. There was discussion of that. But I think maybe to solve that issue that somebody should listen to the tapes and determine that. But I have on Karen's point,
should we be asking Harvey that question? Is that not a legal question?
I know it's a Robert's Rules of Order issue. I don't know if it's what we how we do it here.
Harvey?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, this is not a technical Robert's Rules motion for reconsideration that I believe Mr. Tellis is requesting, although he did use the word reconsideration. I think that's a small R, not a capital R. Technically, motions for reconsideration come up at the time the meeting of the original motion takes place. That's not what this is. This is a discretionary board. It can set policy and change its policy whenever it wishes to do so. You may, for governance purposes, not want to keep revisiting the same issue constantly. That's kind of not what's being suggested here. As I understand it, there's a request from a board member to put something, a policy of the board back on a future agenda for consideration. That's not technically a motion for reconsideration. It doesn't need to follow the rules.
That's great. I just wanted to have that clear and out there.
The board can put that back on a future agenda and reconsider its policy at any time it wishes.
Okay.
So I seem to recall that we did talk about that and said things will change, we can change policy, and the example was PERS, including all those. So I don't think anything we do is cemented, we can never change it with circumstances changing. That seems about how
I'm not opposed to reconsidering it. I just wanted
Okay, we're putting it as a new item. Either way, things change, and we have the ability, as you say, our discretion to add or change anything we want to.
Okay. We'll go ahead and put it on a future item for considering changing the existing policy with regards to what's included in pensionable compensation.
How about amending current policy?
Say that too. As far as what we would like to see from staff on that at that time, there are certain pay items that clearly don't fall within the definition of allowable inclusions under PEPRA. There are some that clearly do. And again, the board has discretion on whether or not to include certain items. So if we could have a list of items that clearly fall within the of pay items within our county that clearly fall within the definition of pensionable compensation under PEPRA.
Didn't you already present that?
Yes, I was going to say that's already been done.
We went through that process.
We're going to change our standards so that maybe they. In the future could include some. I think from the last study we had, there were, and you presented it to us last September, I think it was, there were no items included, or there were very few items that were includable. So do we want them to do that again, or just have the board go back and look at the study that was already done?
Well, they can present the same results of that study. Obviously, they don't have to do any one that was already presented.
I think it's important to have that kind of background before the decision is made, because I don't see this as an all or nothing decision. And without that kind of background, at least for context, we're not going to be able to make that decision, because
that's
I don't
right
think
here.
It's either black or white.
Right. Well,
now we're talking about the individual codes. For the
When you speak to the decision, I'm hearing a lot today, which is kind of surprising. We made a decision in September of 2013. We established a policy. We didn't put it in writing until a year later, but we established the policy about a year and a half ago. So the decision has been made. And I guess I'm trying to understand the rationale for revisiting it. One of the communications indicated that there was a need for statewide uniformity on the issue, but that's not how the statute works. Every board has discretion. Your memo, Kurt, looks to me to kind of make the case pretty amply on page two that different systems do different things, and it says, I think your phrase was, it's all over the board.
We're a long way from statewide uniformity.
Well, and this is a legal issue that we could direct to Harvey and Karen, but I mean, if the statute demanded statewide uniformity, it would have said so, and it would be so, and that's not the case. So it seems to me different counties do different things. We did something in 2013, so I guess I'm not understanding either the urgency or the need for the look again at it. I don't understand what the compelling issue is.
I know what the urgency is. The employers are having issues with it, and I think out of respect, they should have a say in whether it doesn't fit their model. They're having issues with it. I think that's why we're revisiting. I don't think it's anything wrong with bringing it back again. We made a decision. We want to change it later. I'm not sure why you're surprised about that. That's what gets me.
Well, I get. I'm just reacting. I don't disagree that we can look and review any policy that we adopt at any time. I think that's the rule. I think Harvey just kind of alluded to that. I'm just not understanding what the particular reason is here in this instance at this time, because I haven't seen anything, at least that's been presented thus far, that would indicate that we should make a change, need to make a change, did something wrong in 2013, all of the above, and I don't see it.
Well,
I'm just trying to understand.
It's been clear by this memo and articles in the paper that there are other agencies that are allowing differentials, and I want to be able to include this agency in allowing differentials, and I know that there was a vote to do base pay only, and it was a 5-4 vote, and I just think since that vote. CalPERS came out and said what they were allowing, and we've got a study now that says as many as 15 of the counties are going with certain differentials. So I think we need to look at it and reevaluate whether or not we're being fair to our Pepper employees.
I think a big thing changes now that PERS is doing it since our last conversation. And I know there'll be members of the sheriff's office speaking today, but they're having a bad retention issue. Part of this, we're handicapping them by our decision. So I think, in respect to employers, I think it's good to hear their point of view on it.
Oh, I don't disagree that we should hear the employer point of view. I just
can we?
The very debate in 2013. I guess the reason I'm maybe surprised is the wrong word, but I guess I'm not understanding. We had the shift differential debate right here. We had that very discussion. That was hotly debated. I think Todd's predecessor, Rich Cabral, was very, very passionate about that issue. We had a very lively and robust debate. So. Anyway, that's what I recollect. I haven't listened to the tape. I'll concede that. I'll go back and listen to it.
I just think we should ignore what PERS did. PERS is the big one. Some other agencies have done. So not ignoring what they did, I think there are some changes that we have to look at.
Deborah?
I think looking at what other systems do is not the way we have historically made our decisions. We've been a front runner in some things in the past where other systems didn't do it, and then those things were repealed. But in making the motion to go to base pay on PEPRA, one of the points made there was that base pay only would then allow the employer and the employee to negotiate directly with one another on what was pensionable and what was not. And I believe even your own comments about what's gone on in Stanislaw that we just heard is that they have now taken FSLA and merge that into base pay. Is that what we just heard? Right. So that's the sort of course that we were hoping as the intention to go down that course, make the system less complicated as opposed to more complicated, and allow more direct negotiation between the employers and the employees without this board having to make the final decision of what was includable or not includable in the pensionable compensation, because that then opens up this board when we make decisions like that, and we were going down this path of looking at every single pay item that every employer had and making a decision of it's in or it's out. When we go down that path, we then open ourselves up to litigation, which we've seen quite a bit of lately, litigation on every single one of those decisions that we make. And so this was the discussion we had the last time. Just want to make sure we...
You know, if we go to base pay, we're tying the employer's hands. What you're saying is that we're forcing them, if they want to include it, they've got to change their base pay. They're taking away incentive pays, like longevity, to stay longer with their education.
Well, but
by
then
doing
you...
that, well, let me finish. By doing that, I think we're handicapping them. I think we should give them the ability to decide what kind of pay codes they want to offer that can later be used as pensionable. And I don't think it's complicated. I mean, that's what we're here for. We're not here to take the easy route. We're here to do a job and offer a service to our employees and our members, our employers, employees.
And our beneficiaries.
Karen?
I think it should be really clear who the employer is. The sheriff is not the employer. Contra Costa County is the employer. And I'm not saying one way or the other. Pardon me?
What difference does that make, whether it's the sheriff or the...
Well, I think you need to be clear as to who you're talking about. The employer is the entire county of Contra Costa and the 9,000 employees that it has.
Right.
The sheriff is an elected official who isn't even in on negotiations. So I think if you mean the sheriff, that's fine, Gabe, but don't say Contra Costa County is the employer, because that is not true.
If let's say the sheriff wants to run his business, lack of a better word, a certain way, and knows that for retention he's got to give certain incentives.
That's fine, but say it's the sheriff, not the employer, because he is not the employer.
Well, I think Gabe is using employer as health services also. I mean, you want to recruit doctors.
Believe me, I know all about these issues.
No, I'm just saying, I think that's what Gabe is doing, is saying employer, using the county and the employers within the county to negotiate, saying, okay,
well, then let's use the term department head, because right. It's not the employer, is all my point is.
But I think the employer that you got to look at, and it's not just the county, it's the other districts also.
And that's fine.
And the negotiation part of it is, yeah, you can roll everything into your salary. Or you can say, okay, these incentives that by law certain people need to have these certificates to stay within state regulations to make that compensation.
Yeah, we have multiple employers. I mean, the county doesn't oversee everything like us now. So what term would you prefer? Because I'm talking about everybody.
I guess, Gabe, my concern is you're talking as if you know what the employer's concerns are, and I don't think that's a fair assumption. I'm just trying to be clear for the record that there are interests here, and that's fine. But I don't. I wouldn't speak for any other employer other than Contra Costa County. Maybe Todd can speak to the employer of Contra Central Sanitary District. I'm just saying we need to be specific about who we are talking about, who is having, under your concern, retention problems. And I'm just trying to be clearer here, and I don't think it's fair or accurate for you to make a comment that the employer is the one who wants us to look at these, because that's not the case. Maybe the sheriff wants us to look at these things, and that's fine. Then the sheriff should come here and talk to us.
Mr. Chairman, is this the agendizing of this something that requires a vote?
No.
So we are agendizing it. I guess my question is, should we be debating what we're going to be voting on at a future meeting at great length? I have observations to make as well, if we should be. But it strikes me that we are going to go forward with this. I assume that was the case. Therefore, the right time to negotiate or to debate the merits is when we're actually looking at the motion.
You're right.
I've got one suggestion. On the study, when you come back with the study, would you please do me a favor and take an average salary of an employee, somebody that makes around $5,000 a month or so, and do one shift differential. Say they get a graveyard shift differential 5%. Do their base pay and with the multiplier times the year's service, give 30 years service, 62 years of age, and what that final salary is. And then the second example, the same salary, but with the 5% differential times the multiplier times 30 years, and what that salary is, and figure out whether it's 65, 75, 85, 95% of their salary. And give us that. Do you understand what I'm asking for?
Yes.
So we know. Thank you.
To John's point, that we are discussing. I don't think we're voting. I know we're not, but I think this part of discussion. I know it's representatives from at least the sheriff's office that want to speak. And the impression I got is a good time to get everything out, and then we will discuss it again later and vote.
I think it's not relevant at this time until we get to a point where we're going to take action on the item.
Just bring it back.
Okay. We do have one public comment, Jared Pallant.
I just wanted to speak, I guess, to Deborah Allen's comment.
Podium. Jared, if you don't mind.
Briefly.
Hello, I'm Jared Pallant with Local 1230 Contra Costa Fire. In regards to Mrs. Allen's comment about having everything rolled into base pay that's compensable, the board, I mean, you guys recommended that several years ago, and we tried to do that in contract negotiations just recently. And the way our contract negotiations work, we have Local 1230, then we have our fire agency, our chief, and then the county. And trying to get three parties to agree on all of that is when we tried to push that forth and have the county do it, saying this is what Cicero told us to do. Let's roll in some stuff into base pay to make it compensable. The county says no on it. So it becomes this big, complicated triangle of trying to get everybody to agree on it. And that's why, just like the DSA's having retention problems, we're starting to potentially go down that road with some of our new Pepper employees, because we've had our first batch of Pepper employees, and they've already seen that they're paying more for their retirement than what they would be in a CalPERS system, basically, and getting a much lesser benefit when you start looking at holiday pays and parent, like our, we don't have paramedic incentive as compensable. So they're losing out on, they're paying several percent more, and they could be having a 15 to 20% less retirement benefit than what they would have in a like or similar agency within the state. So I just think that's something we need to look at to help basically keep employee retention. Otherwise, we're going to be spending a ton of money recruiting, training, and then they leave in a few years. And it's, you know, for lost cause, basically. And we're losing good employees, and we don't want to go down that road. You know, we want to be able to provide a good level of service to the citizens. So I do think it's something simple. I mean, it's, I don't think it's pension spiking. The FLSA and the holiday pay or paramedic pay, something that they are hired to do, and they're performing that service throughout their life, and they're constantly, you know, recerting and paying out of their pocket to get that training. They should be able to have that as part of their compensation if that's the job they're doing. So it's something that, I mean, there are certain pay codes that should be looked at, and the county, the whatever specialty district, and the locals all need to get on board and figure out what should be considered a compensation as base pay if you want everything rolled into base pay. But trying to get all three entities to work together is rather complicated.
So. And thank you for explaining that. I realize it's a difficult situation that employer and employee groups go through in that process, but I think what you're now saying is, since you're not able to accomplish that at the bargaining table, that you now want this board to make that decision. And I don't think personally that is the place that decision that we're talking about, and that process you just described, really belongs as a decision at the bargaining table and not here.
Okay, so I dealt with our contract negotiations, and you guys say to take it to the county, have it rolled in base pay. County says to take it here and have it put in.
Well, shame on the employers for not doing what should be done. That's all I can say. I'm not there at the bargaining table, so I can't say what's fair, what's not, but I really believe this issue belongs at the bargaining table.
I mean, in the end, just like the largest mall in the state, CalPERS, they make a decision, and all these other agencies that use CalPERS contract with CalPERS for their retirement if they're not a actual state agency, and CalPERS makes a decision, and then that's what's considered pensionable. So that is the a retirement board.
That's how they
making
do it.
A, yeah. I understand that, but that is obviously the way most things go in the state is for retirement, for retiree employees.
Karen, are you considered an employer being the board supervisor? Who is the employer? Isn't like this, is an entity?
Well, for fire, it's a special district, so the board of supervisors sits as the fire board and the governing body, if you will. So, yes, the five of us make up the employer, or Contra Costa County. When we're sitting as the board of supervisors and negotiating MOUs, then we are the employer. And all I will say is I'm not discounting what either person is saying here, but there's a lot more that goes into negotiations and why or why not there's not an agreement reached on that. And I appreciate that you're being told that go and do it here, but frankly, there's a lot more to it than that.
So being on the board, is it your understanding that you told fire to go to the Sarah board and do this?
No, it's not my understanding that.
Okay. So where's the... Saying
the
not.
Disconnect. Saying yes. I mean, that's basically, like I said, I dealt with contract negotiations.
Well, I'm not disputing what he's being told, but we're not told that, and it would not be my direction. It's a financial issue. It's not a go. I'm sorry to hear this, and I will go back and talk to our labor negotiators because I would never want in contract negotiations for an issue that needs to be negotiated to say you go take it to CICERA. That is not my philosophy. I don't think it's my colleague's philosophy. There are financial considerations as to why we're not doing that, not passing the buck back over here to CICERA.
Is there a way to report back to us so we can find out exactly who did make that comment so we'd understand?
Oh, I'll talk to our county administrator and find, you know.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah. Karen.
Thank you. I wanted to clarify for the record and emphasize a point that was made in Kurt's memo to the board on the second page with issues to consider, that none of Cicera's stakeholders, and that includes employers, have commented or taken an official position on this issue, with the only exception being the letter from the Sheriff's Deputies Association, which is attached to the memo and is in your packet. And so the other thing that I want to mention is that when our trustees come here and vote or consider issues as part of the retirement board, they do, and we heard from Harvey many times, have to check their other hat at the door, and they're not sitting here as the employer. They're sitting here as trustees of the retirement system. The board may wish to consider hearing from stakeholders, from employers and others, but the board has not done that yet.
Well, but this matter was on our agenda, right?
Yes.
So all of the employers can look at our agenda, correct?
Correct.
We don't have an employer here to speak, right? Am I correct? Silence. Okay.
We have a department head. We have a department head.
Yes. Well, but my point is, there isn't. We don't have a group of employers that are here to speak to this issue. It's been publicly noticed. We've notified stakeholders about this discussion, and yet there's been no employer testimony here. I'm just making a simple point, but it seems.
You're saying if the employer has a concern, you would have expected them to be there.
Well, yeah. I mean, the memo says we haven't heard from employers. Yeah. And we haven't heard from them today. I guess it's going to my earlier issue, Gabe, about I don't know what the issue is that's compelling a relook at a policy we established, because the employers certainly aren't knocking our door down talking to us about it.
I think there was a misunderstanding, because I know we have department heads, and I think the thought was that they would be the ones to come and represent their point of view. You know, Karen brought up a good point. They're not the employer, and that's a good point.
We have agreed to go ahead and reconsider this down the road with a small r. This discussion will be carried on when it is brought up again. So we have a full agenda, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be here till way past 1, 2, 3 o'clock maybe. Might I suggest that since we've already said we will reschedule it, that we move on.
So I just want to clarify that our board chair has agreed to put it on a future agenda. I don't think that there's been a consensus agreement or anything here. There are some who would like to see it and others who would not like to see it come back. But Brian has stated that he will place it on a future agenda.
End of discussion.
Yeah. We're talking about Linda Robbins.
Who's he representing?
Thank you, Ken Westerman. First of all, I want to thank the body here for taking the time to consider the letter that I wrote back in September. I thought I did a fairly good job of trying to articulate at least the position of the DSA. Secondly, I think this issue really transcends the DSA and really kind of should be involved with all of the employers, and particularly the county. At least in the deputy sheriff's position, we've seen a huge attrition rate in the last year. We've lost 50 deputy sheriffs to competing agencies. Many of those are PERS agencies. And as my colleague from fire said, they're leaving to agencies where not only is the salary higher, but the pension cost is lower for a better pension benefit. So the employees, the younger, smarter employees, are now seeing that they can go to another agency, and not only do they have a better pension benefit, but they're paying a substantial amount less for it. You know, CalPERS is about 12% for their new Pepper employees. Cicera, because of its policies and how they amateurize things, ours is a bit higher. So I think there should be an interest from the employer, particularly the county, that are we losing our quality people, whether you're in the sheriff's department, the fire department, public works, the hospital, whatever classification you hold, do we want to remain competitive or relatively competitive so that we can, we're not spending more money. I think one could make a pretty compelling argument that, you know, it costs a lot of money to train employees in all classifications. So if they continue to walk out the door because our pension system is not competitive, then I think we're doing a disservice to everybody. And if I can kind of attach this to, you know, non-public employees and maybe even say we're in the private sector for a minute, if I was an employer and owning my own business, I would want to make sure that my employees are fairly compensated. And compensation, as we know, is beyond just your salary. It's your total benefit package. And so if I'm looking to my competitors, the people that are providing the same service or product, I would say, well, what are they doing, and why are my employees leaving there and here and there? You want to be somewhat competitive. I understand that we can't always toe that line, but there are other things that the county has which keep people. But if we get to a position where we're so far removed from being competitive, I think that's a disservice to everybody, whether you're in the public, whether you're a taxpayer, whether you're a union person or a non-union person. And I believe, you know, Assistant Sheriff Mark Williams, I asked the sheriff if he supported our position, and he expressed to me that he wholeheartedly supports our position on this matter because he's seen the attrition rate that I'm talking about. So Assistant Sheriff Mark Williams is here today to help me with supporting that cause. So that's all I have to say regarding that.
Can I ask Mr. Westerman a question?
Yes.
Just for clarity of record, in September, you were the president of the DSA.
That's correct.
It's my understanding you're no longer the president of the DSA.
Yes.
So in what capacity are you speaking today?
I am a DSA board member. Although I'm not the president anymore, I'm still a board member of the DSA, and I'm also a member of the system. The reason I've chosen to speak and not the current president is that at the time when I wrote that letter, he was unfamiliar with all of the issues that were going on. So I felt it only appropriate that since I was the original drafter of that letter to this body, that I should speak on it.
Thanks.
Jim. Thank you, Ken.
Could we please ask the speakers to clarify their capacity and
their name
and their name and capacity at this time?
Jim Bickert, Range Lucia Stern, representing the DSA. I wanted to address a question that Mr. Gordon had as to why we're revisiting this issue. When this board made the decision to go with base pay only, it was, I believe, late 2012. PEPRA had only recently been signed. Nobody really knew what it meant or how to interpret it. There was no precedent out there as to how to interpret it. And this board made its best attempt to try to interpret it, especially with respect to this issue. What should we include in pensionable compensation for PEPRA people? Three things have happened since then that have significantly impacted why I think the board should revisit the issue. And they're all contemporaneous and they're all interrelated. PERS has finally weighed in on what should be included, and they've included a whole host of extra pay items above base pay. The governor, in response to PERS' decision, has weighed in and made it clear that he also believes that there are items above base pay that are legitimately included. With respect to the language of similarly situated employees in the same grade or classification, I believe our legal department, or I should say your legal department, made a determination on what that means. But it would appear that the vast majority of other systems out there don't believe that that's what it meant. So with those things in mind, I guess my question is not, as Mr. Gordon put it, why would we want to revisit this? The question, I think, is why would we not want to revisit this? Thank you.
Hey, Jim.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Mark Williams, and I'm an assistant sheriff with the sheriff's office. I'll keep my comments brief, but I am here this morning on behalf of Sheriff Livingston, and I want the record to reflect that we're in full support of the DSA's position on this matter in regard to reevaluating this policy. I can speak from experience. The last two or three years, we've had a huge issue with retention. That's no secret. What we're experiencing this year is a huge issue with recruiting, and that's when it starts getting scary for us, and we believe that this will just further compound the issue. So thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Yes.
My name is Mike Mullen. I'm the president for the Local 3546 Yamhill Valley Firefighter Association. And I don't believe that this is the place for the arena for negotiations. I know where that exists. I know where it lies. But there's a couple of things I'd like to point out to the board. Our contract negotiations aren't up until 2018. So going back into my recollection of the history here, when the discussion was had as to whether or not to include some of these differential pay items in the compensation for retirement, I had a discussion with the chair at the time. And explained that our paramedics in our department are hired. It is a requirement that you're a paramedic to work for our organization. So to exclude retirement compensation from those individuals, which it is now excluded, is no different than to exclude their retirement compensation based upon their salary as firefighters. There's no option. This is not something they do 5 years into their career, 10 years into their career. You cannot be employed in our department if you are not a paramedic. It's required. At the time, the chair and the board led me to believe that the reason they were coming to the conclusions that they did was because they were going on PERS model. And I disagreed with it at the time, and I expressed that disagreement with the chair. Now I understand the board's reconsidering because PERS has changed their model. But they're questioning as to whether or not they're going to change the model. And I heard it said today that, well, there's no reason to go do it the way other people are doing it. We want to do it the way we're doing it. But that wasn't what was said to me 2 years ago. And then as far as calculating the cost of retirement, I do believe that negotiations belongs in that arena. But we will be going to negotiations in 2018, and we're going to change our model. We're going to include our incentives in base pay. That will be my focus. That's the animal that I'm going to choose to fight, the sword that I'm going to fall on, because it's only fair to those employees. There's a huge discrepancy currently between those employees before PEPRA and the employees who come after. It's the responsibility of the board. This is just an administrative responsibility, an actuarial responsibility, to anticipate that event, because it will occur. And then to calculate the cost of retirement now, which is more responsible than waiting 5 years or 6 years or 10 years, because these employees now that have fallen into this discrepancy are not going to continue through their careers with the discrepancy being what it is. They're going to change that. And the retirement board is going to come up with a cost for retirement for those employees. Once they negotiate those contracts, once all those incentives go into base pay, you're going to be hit with a pretty big bill. I think it's wiser to amortize those out over a long period of time, and I think that Kurt would agree with me. So just as a matter of due process or the responsibility of the board, this is not an issue to be argued, whether the employee negotiates or the employer negotiates or the CSERA board negotiates for all the members of the retirement board. It's the responsibility of this board to anticipate a common sense approach to what will happen eventually, and then to figure out what the cost of the retirement is going to be based upon that anticipation. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Karen?
Thank you. I know when this issue was brought up several months ago to have this agendized today, I asked our executive director to find out if there was anything going on with the Department of Finance, because I had heard that there was some discrepancy, and I think Gail had told me that you couldn't find anything?
No.
Okay. So my question is, when this matter comes up, I know PERS has taken action, but I still am under the impression that it hasn't been implemented yet. So I would like staff to do the research with at least PERS, because I'm understanding that the left hand is not talking to the right hand. And while PERS as a body has taken a vote to include certain things, I'm not sure if that's been implemented yet. So I would want that information to come out. Do you have different information?
No.
Oh, I mean, I just saw a quizzical look on your face.
We'll look into it.
Because I'm not sure that, in fact, and I don't know how that all works. You know, if PERS says to do something, is it automatic? I'm understanding that it is up to the Department of Finance to say yay or nay. And I'm oversimplifying it. But I want to know for sure that the action that PERS took is, in fact, being implemented in PERS agencies as they calculate retirement. And if not, when will that happen, or what are the impediments to it getting there? We need further information on that.
I'll find out and get back to you.
Well, no, not me. To the body. We need to know that information because we're hearing here that PERS has done X, Y, and Z, and we all have heard that, and we know that. I'm not sure that just because they've said that, that is starting to be implemented.
Jim? Ryan, real quick, I certainly don't expect you guys to believe me, but...
Jim, I think we need to go to the mic. So
Does this give me any more credibility? My understanding is that PERS never took any premium pays away from the PEPR employees, that they still include all of their premium pays for their PEPR employees. All their policy did was perhaps limit a few of the premium pays that they would get. So the PERS has never been at base pay and they're deciding to put more in. They have continued to include the premium pays, and their new policy is maybe just to limit it. Thank you.
Okay.
I have one last thing to say. I think what I'm saying is that we either go base pay and we're done, easy for us, or we go to normal pay. You can always only make it base pay. I'm not saying we won't do that later, but at least it gives us the ability to make that decision. So I think one way we tie our hands, the other way, again, we can still say base pay, but at least we have the ability to decide what we want to do.
Okay. I think the horse is dead for today.
We'll
bring it back on the future agenda. So let's move on to